This is World Affairs Monthly, and I have Mr. Philippe Diaz on the line. He is the writer and director of a documentary film titled The End of Poverty, Think Again. And it was produced recently by Cinema Libre Studios in Los Angeles, California. It is due to open in theaters across the United States, starting in New York City on November 13th and in Los Angeles on November 25th. Cinema Libre Studio can be found on the net at cinemalibrestudio.com. And information about the film itself can be found on the net at theendofpoverty.com. Philippe, it's a pleasure to have you on the line. And, well, you know, yes, this morning I was struggling to come up with a way of thinking about the film, a brilliant film, and of course, a very serious one, because I hesitate to say this, but, you know, it might be addressing the most important issue that we are facing, period, you know, in the world. I mean, let's leave aside morality for a moment, which is not necessarily something I advocate, but, you know, let's leave it aside for a moment and admit that, you know, Susan George, whom you interviewed in the film, admits she is right that the South is funding or financing the North, right, you know, to the tune of her estimate is $200 billion a year. And, of course, this is, I would take it, this is mostly debt servicing. Okay, take it as a fact. She's right for stating this truth. And, of course, not many people talk about that. But let's imagine these two options here. Will we all benefit more from this arrangement, which is essentially billions of people are exploited as, you know, veritable slaves by this system we have called capitalism, you know, modern capitalism, or will we all benefit more by raising these billions of poor people up, treating them with justice and dignity, and exploiting their potential brain power?
Right.
You know, and I figured that's basically our option. And I'm tending to think that your film, a brilliant film, was really all about showing that the second is the you know, the shrewder option.
Right. Well, you know, it's a very interesting question, and it's the one that I, you know, we toured with the film in more than 25 international film festivals.
Yeah.
And people arrive usually at the conclusion of the Q&A, you know, which follows the screening,
yeah,
at the beginning. But I guess you are more, you know, more aware and more knowledgeable about these kind of issues, so it's where you come right away to the point.
Right.
I think that the issue is very clear, because even as you said, leaving morality aside,
yeah,
you know, we are in a situation where we are, it's a situation which started long ago, as you saw in the film, but that we are overproducing. We are producing,
yeah,
much more, you know, than we can
consume
and use,
yeah,
you know, every year.
Sure.
And therefore, you know, we are in a situation where in order to arrive at this level of production, we had to put these people in the worst level of poverty.
Yeah.
So, of course, it's a vicious circle or catch-22, because, of course, these people cannot buy our products anymore.
Right.
So what do we do with our products?
Right.
You know, and, of course, the reality is that unless we understand, and again, about morality set aside,
yeah,
unless we understand that we have to leave these people out of poverty in order for them to continue working,
yes,
you know, we will continue to dig the hole that we have been digging for the last 500 years under our feet.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I certainly agree with that. However, I would put this spin on it. I would simply say the first option, which is what we've chosen,
right,
is good for us in the North, because it means limited competition.
Yes.
And then the second option, of course, may produce in the end result a lot better things for everybody, but it represents for us fierce competition.
Right.
So, you know, if I one day said to you, well, I'm going to make films too, Philippe, and I'm going to, you know, do better than you, and you know, and after 2 years I did better than you, you probably wouldn't be very happy.
Well, yeah, but you know, that's an interesting point.
Because, right.
Meaning there are a couple of things that we can say. First,
okay,
you are right on the concept, because of course, if we leave these people out of poverty, they can compete with our system,
yeah,
and with our products and with our manufacturers and etc.
Mm-hmm.
What is very interesting, I'm sure you saw that in the film,
yeah,
you know, there is a little moment which I really wanted in the film, because very few people know about that,
mm-hmm,
is when we explain that how the British Empire of the past and the French and the Spanish and the Portuguese destroyed methodically,
yeah,
you know, all,
sure,
all the little industry of craftsmanship,
yeah,
that people had at the time in the colonies, to make sure they could not compete with
Spain. Exactly, exactly.
You know, the way that the British destroyed the Indian weavers.
Yeah,
you know, and they
sure.
created this massive number of poor people
yeah.
by doing that, of course, because those people didn't have a livelihood anymore.
Right.
You know, and they destroyed, you know, all the you know, there was the salt issue in India, and there was like tons of other things,
yeah.
which became, you know, monopoly of the British Empire.
Right.
And the idea was, of course, to not have competition.
That's right.
But now, when you look at what's going on today, I think we realized in the last, you know, even let's say 5 years.
If you could speak up a little bit louder, Philippe, I'm sorry.
To make it closer,
yeah.
You know. I'm already speaking.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
No
yeah.
The, you know, what we realized in the last 5 years is that this production in a country, consuming in another country, and all the transport and all the loss of energy
yeah.
which occurs in this process is a major mistake, of course, because we have the climate issue, of course, that
yeah.
we all know very well now. And we realize that now we have to go back to not only produce and consume locally,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we, you know, we have to put a stop on this kind of system because we are destroying the planet.
Yeah, like of course.
Well,
we're abusive.
Today, you know,
yeah.
And that is, I think, the answer, because we can, meaning the idea, you know, and it's very interesting because if you look at what's going on the G20 summit today.
Yeah, yeah, good day to talk,
today,
yeah.
You know, you have President Obama who is trying to promote, not just him, but a lot of leaders there,
yeah.
are trying to tell the Chinese that they have to take care of their own national market first.
Right.
Rather than to export all that, because of course, this producing and exporting system that we have created in the last 100 years,
yeah.
you know, is making a disaster of the planet. And it's a huge loss of energy, it creates
True.
A huge amount of pollution, and you know, and of course, it takes away from the local producers
yeah.
the possibility to make a livelihood, as simple as that.
True.
So there's a very funny moment in the film, if you remember, when
yeah.
you had this guy from MST, the Movimento Sem Terra people in Brazil, you know, we explained that even today, countries like Brazil have to import, you know, staple food
yeah.
like rice and milk and etc. because
mm-hmm.
they are used, you know, as we explained in the film, they were forced by the colonial power at the
yeah.
time to grow what we call the monoculture, and the
right.
culture of sugar cane and this and that. And they have lost, like in many countries, like in Venezuela, it was the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They have lost the capacity to build for their own people.
Sure.
To grow food for their own people.
Yeah, that's
it. You know, and that's, I think we have to go back to that. We have to go back to a national system where, number one, you know, people grow for their local people and not
yeah.
to export.
Yeah. I agree with that. However, you know, right now I'm looking at a graph plotting per capita income against per capita oil consumption. And it's quite astonishing, this graph. You can find it at worldaffairsmonthly.com, and I'll tell you about it after I hang up here. But the United States has by far the highest per capita oil consumption, and therefore it has also the highest per capita income.
Right.
And of course, the G8, the G7, is right up there above $20,000 a year. So they have below the U.S., but still very high. And then everybody else is way down below. And so I was going to propose to you, Philippe, it's really all about, you know, mostly about oil and getting as much energy into your system as possible. And I would submit to you that even if the Chinese wanted to, they would never be able to raise their consumption up to a modestly impressive level simply because they don't have enough per capita oil consumption in their economy. And so they,
you're absolutely right.
Yeah. yeah.
And I was more basic. I was talking about food.
Oh, no, I know. But I'm just thinking that if these countries, poor countries, want to develop, I'm afraid to say that maybe the ultimate problem for them is to, of course, be able to purchase oil.
Right.
And if they're poor, they're not going to be able to purchase it. So they're going to have to, you know, and I'm looking at the countries up here at the top. You know, they were all sponsored, literally sponsored by the Marshall Plan after their destruction or near destruction in World War II. So, you know, they were sponsored by us.
Right, of course.
And if these countries in the developing world, the poor, really poor countries are going to, if they're going to develop, they're going to have to be sponsored by us instead of exploiting them.
You know, the reality,
right?
as you know, because it's the whole theory of the film,
yeah.
is that, you know, the problem is that we put them in this situation. You know, so
dependent on us.
If we had not like stole, you know, the land and the resources,
yeah,
and people, you know, and enslaved people for centuries, you know, they would not be in a situation where they can develop.
Of course.
Because, you know, look at countries like, you know, take the best example today is probably Congo, which has the best resources in the world.
Right.
Everything in the underground, you know, every mineral and the most advanced mineral from uranium to coltan and all these things that we need for cell phone and computer.
Of course.
You know, they are one of the poorest countries. Why? Because their entire resources are in the hands of, you know, foreign corporations and foreign powers.
Yeah, no question.
Of course, what can they do to develop? Nothing.
Well, especially when you have a guy like Mobutu ruling over the place for decades.
Yeah, but you know, he was paid and supported by the North.
Of course. I mean, I'm just saying that it's no accident that a loony tune like him is ruling over Congo.
Like I think John Perkins said in the film, unfortunately we killed all the presidents who decided to killed or removed all the presidents who decided to do something for their country.
Exactly.
Exploit their own resources.
Yeah.
Lumumba in Congo and, you know, and Mossadegh in Iran, et cetera.
So clearly the North is exploiting the South, clearly.
Yes,
the question is, are we in the North going to realize, like I said at the outset of the interview, and your film is just the excellent way to discuss this issue, are we going to realize that we all benefit more from raising up the billions of people in the South, treating them as basically equals and with justice, dignity, all that good stuff, and exploiting their brain power, potential brain power, because they're not too smart now. They can barely take care of themselves. You know, the poor, miserable people who can barely function daily because they can't eat enough. I mean, it's dreadful. But I would leave morality aside because we're not moral. Right? I mean, it's horribly cruel.
No, that's for sure. But the reality is, you know, I think we are in a situation, I think that, you know, I'm asked all around the world during Q&A, like, what is the number or the sentence in the movie which summarizes the best the situation that we are on, that we are in? And of course, what I say all the time is like, look, is what Serge Latouche, the professor, says, is that if today we are consuming 30% more than what the planet can regenerate, it means that we are digging under our feet a hole bigger and bigger every year.
True.
And the only way to compensate this hole is by putting more and more people under the poverty level.
True.
Because if we consume 30% more than what the planet can regenerate, it means that we have to find the 30% somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know, and of course...
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
So, how far can we go? Because one day they will all revolt, unless we will all, you know, we want to go back to Nazism and kill all the poor, which is possible.
Well, you know, I was just going to mention that we're in a race to develop the brain power of these people, poor people, so that we'll all benefit and raise ourselves all up, or we're in a race to destroy a good portion of the humanity that I should just point out that I don't know much about the Neanderthals that came before the Homo sapiens, but you know, there is some discussion about the Homo sapiens exterminating the Neanderthals, and you know, I can just see it right now. You know, these people.
You know, I just saw part of a documentary on television in a Nova program or something like that, when they were doing a very interesting parallel, saying that in fact they were making a parallel between our civilization and the past civilization, and they were showing that the civilization of the past got extinct at the moment where they reach this level of over-consumption, over-pollution, over-deforestation, over-consumption, etc., etc.
And they were in denial about it, of course.
Yeah, and that's very interesting, because, you know, it's clear that if we are not smarter than this past civilization,
that's
we'll
right.
do the same thing.
Oh, of course.
We'll go from, you know, like the African professor says in the film, Okoto Gendo, he says, the resource war will continue, and will become bigger and bigger.
Of course. Of course, and you're right. It's clear that we cannot just continue on this path of maybe 500 million people exploiting the rest, which is about almost 7 billion people, whatever the number is.
Absolutely.
You know, it's nice.
You know, and again, because if we are getting, you know, it's the hole that we are digging under our feet is exponential.
Yeah.
So which means that, as Milan Kutari, who is the UN reporter in the film, you know, was interviewed, he says, you know, it is clear that because of our system, more and more people will have to die every year.
Yeah.
That's simple as that.
Yeah, that's obvious.
And, you know, so either you're right, either we lead them out of their poverty and they can buy our product and
They can invent new things and new. We need to risk the increased competition for the hope that they will benefit everybody.
No, of course, because in any event, it's clear that when these people get out of their misery, they will take care first and foremost about their own people. It's clear, and they will. So even their brain power, honestly, I'm not too worried about that, because I know that they will concentrate first on getting their people out of misery.
Sure.
And they will go, of course, and today they know that they have to go to renewable energy and all these kind of things,
mm-hmm.
and finding ways to grow more food and better food for their people, et cetera, et cetera. So, so I would say before that they arrive at a level where they can really compete with us, on a global level, it will take, probably many decades or maybe centuries,
Okay.
I think the reality is that we are at a point where we are shooting ourselves in the foot every day, but not doing something for them.
I agree with you.
Taking away from them in the first place.
Yeah.
So, but now it's the boomerang effect.
Yeah.
It comes back to haunt us and destroy us.
Well, the question, Philippe, and I take it you're French. Well, I actually am married to a French woman, and I speak some French. Yeah. So I figured you must be French. But the question is, in Paris there, or in London, or in Washington, are the senior policymakers, the big men, are they going to take our argument seriously, or are they just going to say, Philippe and Tom are naive and this is the way the world is, and we can't do anything about it. What do you think they're thinking?
You have, as we all know, you have two kind of intellectual or politicians.
Yeah.
You have the one who believe that the capitalist system is the only good system in the world, and
right.
we have to live with it, and we don't want to look anywhere else.
Right.
Or you have the other kind who says, well, we are in a crisis and we have to solve it.
Okay.
And we will not solve this crisis unless we, deeply, deeply change our system and our way of consuming and our lifestyle and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
It's why, as you saw at the end of the movie, we arrive at the solutions part.
There
is Cliff Garbo explained the practical solution that, the monopoly of our resources and this and that.
Sure.
And you have Serge Latouche who explained that, because, of course, this concept of we are consuming 30% more than the planet can regenerate, that the only way is to deeply change our lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
In this way, he talks about degrowth.
Okay.
Because of course, there is no way. As I think John Perkins says, with 20% of the world consume more than 80% of the resources.
Yeah.
That can't work.
Yeah.
It could work, and capitalism was a perfect system until we thought that. The resources of the planet were unlimited.
Yes.
In the 19th century,
sure.
we thought that the resources of the planet were unlimited.
Yeah.
So in that case, of course, there's no problem.
Right.
We can consume 10 times more
Absolutely.
Than the neighbor. Who cares?
Yes. So you're really...
If the neighbor wants to consume 10 times more, you'll just have to go and get it.
Okay.
But now we learned, probably almost 100 years ago, that's not true.
That's not true.
The resources of the planet are clearly limited, and we are using, again, more than what it can regenerate every year.
Yeah.
So in that situation, of course, this unrestrained capitalism cannot work anymore.
Right. Okay.
No matter if you like it or not, no matter if you are poor and against, it's a mathematical issue.
Yeah, I agree. Now, it's interesting. I agree with you that the resource issue is the fundamental driver of this crisis. And yet, I allow me to criticize you a little bit. You didn't really emphasize that in the film.
Well, I think I did. Because,
okay.
The problem, what I wanted to do, and I think it's how the movie makes a difference. I wanted to go back to the past.
Okay. It's the colonialism. Okay.
And if you take the situation today and say, here we are in a crisis and we have to do something about it, unless you understand why we are in a crisis, I don't think you can change.
All right.
Because what we wanted, number one, is to change the mentality and the way people think about the poverty issue and the issue of the crisis today.
Yeah.
And unless you explain from day one how we got to this situation, it's very hard for people to understand.
I agree. I'm not saying you shouldn't have discussed colonialism, but I'm wondering if for example, I interviewed Dennis Meadows not too long ago. Dennis was one of the lead of the. He and his wife were the lead members of the Club of Rome in 1970, I guess, when they issued their book called The Limits of Growth, Limits to growth. And you know, 30 years later, 40 years later, you know, it's pretty clear that they were right, but we're still around. So, you know, what do you say to, you know, the argument is, yes, we're running out of resources, but we're still here, and the rich are consuming happily still. Right. The poor are, like you just predicted, are getting poorer and poorer. And I thought that was very interesting. You know, 100 years ago, let me go to the figures right here. I have them right here. Yeah, in 1820, the ratio between the richest and the poorest countries was 3-1. And then in 1950, it became 35-1, and in 1997 it is 74-1. So that, right. there's the truth right there.
You know, right? You bring a good point, because we are still here, but at what cost?
Yeah, at what cost? Yeah.
How many people had to die for
right.
people same lifestyle?
A lot.
You know, exactly.
A lot.
That's the issue. You know, they die, and it's not just direct consequences like they can. They don't have the
indirect causes
facility to survive.
Of course.
People die of very simple illness just because we don't let them the possibility to take care of them.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the reality. So of course, if we say, hey, we don't care how many people will have to die as long as I can keep three cars in my garage, that's fine. That's a way of living, and of course that's, as you say, morality set aside.
Yeah.
If you are happy with three cars in your garage, that's what it is.
Yeah.
But the reality is you have to realize that to keep these three cars, you know, many people will have to die.
Right.
Know, and that's what it is. You
know? And that's exactly what's happening.
You know, and they won't have to die because they were born in the wrong place at the wrong time. They will have to die because we decided long ago that we were giving ourselves the right to take what they have
right.
in order for us to get the three car in the garage.
Yeah. I jotted down some notes here, and I put four steps here in the process. Our system, this is how I distilled our system into four steps. Number one, install puppet leaders or despots to do your work. Okay, number two, rape and pillage, or whatever you want to call it, the resources, and of course put into slavery the people in these countries. And number three, the wealthy in the U.S., in the West, Western countries, including in France, of course, you basically have at the top, maybe not outright criminally oriented men, but almost, you know, the thugs themselves, you know. And number four, you have obviously an unjust system based on the exploitation, the cruel exploitation of not just a couple of million people, but, you know, frankly, billions of people.
Right.
And that's it.
Absolutely. And you know what was very fascinating when I started to work and do all the research for the project?
Yeah.
What was very interesting, which I don't think I was interested by these issues all my life.
Yeah, okay.
But the thing is, what I didn't realize is how it started at the beginning. And for example, as you know, the foundation who financed the film with us, the Robert Shack and Back Foundation, is promoting the idea of Henry George. And Henry George is this philosopher who says that everything started with the land.
Okay.
The land, because you remove people from their land and you create poverty.
Yes, of course.
You know, and it's true that if you look at what happened, of course, as I showed in the film, from the beginning of colonialism, but even today, look at what's going on today. The biggest courier and firm bought most of the arable land in Madagascar.
I see.
Like that.
Yeah.
You know, wherever it is.
Okay.
It's interesting because no matter if it's by way of the GAN or by way of economical tool like the Structural Adjustment Program of the IMF,
right.
by just a check,
right.
by cash,
sure.
you know, we will always deprive people from what they need to survive.
Yeah.
And the number one issue is the land. Forget about the coltan and the,
right.
and the uranium or the oil.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
The number one issue is the land. You know?
Yeah.
And by taking away from them, of course, that's where poverty started. And I never realized, you know, when I started the film, how deep the
yeah. Yeah. Well, I have the advantage of I've traveled to about 85, 90 countries. We've lost track. And I mean, traveled really extensively, not just from, you know, I didn't travel as a rich guy. And I saw all of this myself. And it was just so obvious that most of these people do not necessarily have to suffer. We could free them. And they could help us. But the rich in the West don't want the competition.
No,
just like The Economist magazine doesn't really like the idea that I'm doing world affairs mostly.
You know, I think before competition, I think there's one thing that we are afraid.
Yeah.
We are afraid on this degrowth concept.
Yeah.
We are afraid that we won't be able to drive wherever we want, whenever we want, with a big car, small car, plane, by whatever.
Sure.
We're afraid that, you know, it will have to change our lives.
Sure.
You know, and
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, Brian. A lot of when people are a little bit questioning the movies, they say, well, but what would happen if they had access to their resources?
Yeah.
And my answer is very simple. I said, look what happened when one resource is really in the end of the people who have it. It's oil, of course.
Yeah.
You know, they created this union of the resource managers.
Sure.
You know, let's call it OPEC. And they pushed the price at whatever level they thought was the right price.
Right.
And now these countries are the richest in the world.
Right.
It's as simple as that.
So yes.
So let's assume that we would do the same thing with land, with water, with timber, with whatever you want, whatever mineral you want.
Sure.
Of course, these people would become the richest in the world.
Yeah.
You know, so.
No question.
You know, and that's.
Well, and it's very interesting that Muammar Gaddafi is about the only living guy around, a ruler of any country, oil-rich country, that actually managed to survive.
Right.
And he was one of the main drivers of OPEC, And in fact, it's interesting that whenever I look at the press, you know, the British press, or even I'm sure the French press is the same, you know, they kind of always depict Gaddafi as some loony.
Right. But you know what is interesting, if you look at it like deeply, the way this guy, and there's another guy that I name in 2 seconds, another of the same guy, the way they managed to stay in power.
Yeah.
Because Gaddafi was the first guy who decided to split the revenues of the oil
right.
with people.
Okay.
So of course, when, you know, and that started like, you know, 60 years ago, whenever he came in power.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's true that in Libya, you know, people don't work much. They just get a check from the government from the oil revenues.
Yeah.
And you know, the other guy who is doing exactly the same thing, it's why he was reelected, is Mr. Ahmadinejad in Iran.
Yeah.
You know, Ahmadinejad is writing a check.
Yeah, he's spreading it around. Yeah.
You know what is interesting, what people don't realize, is that the last election was an election of the poor versus the rich.
Yes, no question.
The poor people,
the elite versus, yes.
Because they got a check from the oil revenue.
Yes, no question. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, he's trying to spread the wealth around.
That they do, of course.
Yeah, no, I've been to Libya, and it's a pretty poor country for an oil producer. It's pretty miserable, but I've been to Venezuela too, and Venezuela is even poorer. And before the so-called anti-American Hugo Chavez came to power, this wealth from Venezuela went all to the United States, or mostly, you know. And that nothing was left for the Venezuelans. So we are guilty. The question is what to do about it, Philippe.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, Cliff Cobb is summarizing very simply, you know, there are two steps in the solution.
Okay.
The steps that Cliff Cobb is summarizing, which are, number one, of course, we have to end these odious debts.
Yeah. That's true. Absolutely.
You know, we have to end that as soon as possible because they were totally manipulated, as John Perkins explained in the film. They were absolutely fake debt that we impose on people just to be able to have access to their resources cheaply. Okay, so that we have to end that. We have to end the monopoly of our resources, natural resources.
Sure.
Because there is no reason that, you know, few people or few companies should benefit from the resources of another country.
Yeah.
That. You know, we have to do agrarian reform, of course, and give back the land to people who had it at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So because it's funny, there was, I can tell you, the first cut of the movie was 3 hours long.
Yeah.
And also, of course, I decided it was too much.
Yeah, 3 hours
but
is too much.
The first part of the film was not about colonialism, was about how it was working before colonialism.
Yeah.
You know, when everybody had a piece of land to grow, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
And what was interesting is to see, apart from, of course, which happens sometimes, you know, natural cataclysm, there was no famine and no poverty in this country.
Yeah.
When everybody has a plot of land to grow his own food,
there
is no problem.
Yeah.
You know, because, of course, it was before the land and all the resources were all in common.
Yeah.
As you've explained in the film as well.
Sure.
And as long as they're all in common, even if you have a problem, your crop has a, you know, as an illness or whatever, something happened and you can't have enough food to feed your family, the rest of the community will provide.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and
they'll chip in,
the main idea also is we have to understand that the only way is to go back to the concept of the commons.
Yeah.
You know, there is no reason for which, again, you know, you know, accompanied, you know, that's a good example in the film also about the water war in Bolivia.
Okay.
Why would Bechtel benefit from, you know, the water which is running in the river in Bolivia?
Yeah.
That is absurd and it's a nonsense.
Right.
And we have to go back to this concept of these natural resources should be held in common and benefit to all.
Yeah.
You know, among others.
Yeah.
But of course, again, because again, as we know, the major problem, also, one of the major problems, is world population continues to grow.
That's right.
Unless we work very hard on the inequalities, you know, and unless we rebalance,
yeah.
you know, the world, the north versus the south, etc., and therefore go to the degrowth concept and start to change our lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
we will continue to be in this hellish situation.
Because yeah.
of course, we will have more resource war, we will have more terrorism, we will
yeah.
have more disasters, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure, no question. In fact, you know, the war in Iraq is clearly a resource war. I mean, you know, you look at this graph again, I'm going to make sure I publish it with this interview, per capita income versus per capita oil consumption. You know, the United States is up on the top, and of course, to maintain that position, it invaded Iraq.
Exactly, absolutely. And I have to say, that you can see morally set aside, you can say that today we are in an incredible situation because we created this situation started 500 years ago,
yeah.
as we explained,
yeah.
and today there is nothing we can do unless we change our lifestyle.
Yeah.
If we want to maintain this lifestyle and this level of consumption,
right.
we will have to do more, to have more resources. Well, we will have
sure.
to engage in, you know, more countries. We will have to put more people in poverty,
yeah.
et cetera.
No question.
Where the situation where we are in, you know, we have the choice.
Yeah.
You know, either we can go back and realize we made a mistake, and that was not the right way to.
How much time do you think we have, Philippe?
Listen, there was a great
Curious.
Part that
yeah.
Serge Latouche said. I didn't put it in the film because
yeah.
I had to cut my 3 hours first.
Yeah, yeah. Poor guy.
He was saying, you know, I wake up every day
yeah.
wondering if it's for today or for tomorrow. He says we are going toward a major economic crisis, and he is the kind of expert who thinks that because we are so entrenched in this lifestyle and in his way of consuming,
yeah.
he said we will have to have a major disaster where everything will have to stop.
Well, it's almost happening right now.
Well, yeah, almost, you know.
Yeah.
But he thinks that that's the only way that we'll go back to a normal way of living, what he considers a normal way of living.
Yeah.
Without pillaging anybody else.
Said
unless we are actually this major catastrophe, we will not be able, the people won't be smart enough to, you know. So he's the pessimistic expert.
Yeah.
I hope he's wrong, trust me, I hope
yeah.
he's wrong. But we have no time. It's like climate change, it's the same thing. I think we don't realize that the poverty issue is as important, if not more important, than the climate change issue.
Yeah.
You know, because it is clear that today, we know that we have no time, we're already way behind what we should have done to remedy climate change.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same thing for poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the more people will see their, you know, if you see your family dying because of someone else's actions,
yeah.
one day or another you'll take a gun.
Yeah.
And say, that's enough. I saw too much of my friends and families dying, you know, I have enough.
Yeah.
And of course we are creating, you know, the...
That's what we have.
Yes. You know, the French investment banker that he interviewed at the end, he says, you know, all policies with resources, terrorism is a direct consequence of all policies with resources.
Of course.
And he's right, of course.
You know? Yeah.
We can't oppress, countries for generation and generation and generation and think that one day they won't revolt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very interesting because, you know, we are talking today about the crazy Ahmadinejad and this and that.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, you know, you talk today with Iranian, I just produced a movie with an Iranian people.
Yeah.
I was immersed in it for immersion for a long time.
Yeah.
And you know, it's very funny that in Iran, they are still very, very mad at the U.S.
Yeah.
for having removed their nationalist government.
Yes.
You know, the government of Mohammad Mossadegh.
Yeah.
You know, in the 50s.
Right.
You know, they had freely elected, was working for the people and
yeah.
for the country, and we removed it and put, you know, the 40 years of dictatorship instead by the Shah.
Yeah.
And they are still mad at that.
Yeah.
And the only reason for which today we have an Islamic, you know, regime in Iran, it's because of our actions.
Of course.
Putting the Shah in power.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's what we have to understand, is that, you know, there are consequences for all of our actions. And we forget about that. We said, oh, you know, we got rid of the of Mossadegh and put the Shah, whatever, you know. But no, that's the consequences of today having an Islamic regime in Iran.
Well, the Spanish probably at the height of their empire believed that they were invincible as well.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and I'm thinking that you know, the French were thinking they were invincible in Algeria and West Africa. And, and France is considerably diminished as a power today.
Of course, absolutely.
Very much diminished.
Absolutely, but you know, I don't think there is a way out of, you know, ruling by oppressing people.
Yeah.
You know, one day or another, it will bite you.
Oh yeah. No question. Yeah.
During our lifetime, or during the lifetime of your children or your grandchildren, but it will come back to haunt you.
Yeah. And the Romans learned that.
Of course.
You know, they could subjugate lots of people, and of course the Roman, usually when the Roman, I've been told by historians, it appears that when a Roman legion approached, you know, a settlement so-called barbarians, people ran like hell.
Oh.
You know, no one really fought.
Right.
And so, you know, as long as we're strong, we can maintain this system. But if we're weak, I don't think we'll be able to maintain it. And in fact, here in the United States right now, I would argue that unless we get the cash from the Chinese, from the Arabs, or from, Hector Japanese, I guess, you know, these folks who are cash rich, unless we have their cash, we're not going to pay for the electricity bill.
Oh, no.
You know, we're bankrupt.
Absolutely. But you know, there is something which always surprised me, is that how people don't react to the fact that today China holds the economy of the U.S. in its hands.
Yeah.
China has the biggest reserve of dollars in the world.
That's right.
If tomorrow China dumps these dollars on the market, I know it's not their interest in this and that, I understand that.
Well, they might do it.
For the sake of discussion, if they decide to do that, there is no more U.S. economy.
That's right.
And I don't understand why people don't react to that and say, what are we doing?
Yeah.
You know, it's beyond absurd.
Well, you know, you probably heard of a Jewish historian, Barbara Tuchman, Jewish American historian, Barbara Tuchman. She wrote a very, very good book called The March of Folly. Mm-hmm. And I think that she answers that question. People don't realize.
Right. No, it's true. But, you know, even when you say that to people, they look at you and say, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't concern them.
Well.
And of course concern is more than anything else.
Yeah. Well, that's where your film is important, because, you know, it's an educational experience, and people have to understand, most people should come to understand that the world is not what they're told. You know, it's a little bit more cruel, and as John Perkins would say, you know, the nastiness is there. You just gotta look for it.
Absolutely.
So
the major source of responsibility.
Yeah, the media is very bad.
Of course, because, you know, the problem is that when you lie to people, you put them in sugar candy coat thing, you know, all day long.
Yeah.
Well, of course, you know, why would they bother?
Right,
you know,
right.
Often to watch a horror movie than to watch The End of Poverty. That's for
yeah.
Sure.
Well, sure. Well, I won't keep you much longer, Philippe, but what about this? What if I ask you, what do you see, you know, happening in the world? I mean, right now, analyze this economic collapse, and then, of course, that's a big question, but, you know, what has happened and why, and what vision of the future do you have, you know,
well,
from your perspective?
You know, honestly, unfortunately, I have part of me who is very pessimistic and part of me wants to be optimistic.
Okay.
You know, but the reality is that right now we are putting band-aids on a major problem.
Yeah.
You know, of course we can pour money in bank and in financial institution or insurance group or whatever it is, but that's only a band-aid to solve a very minimal problem, you know, which is, for example, the real estate crisis.
Yeah.
That will not solve anything. It will look better for a little while. So I don't know if the little while, 3 months, 6 months, or 2 years.
Yeah.
But it will look better. But at the meantime, we continue to dig the hole.
Mm-hmm.
We continue to put more money in the hand of the Chinese. We continue to put more people in poverty. We continue to let more people die, etc., etc., etc. So unless we radically change the system and stop to dig the hole, of course, one day we will have, as Serge Latouche predicts,
yeah,
you know, a major crisis where we'll all have to go back to the forest to try to find food.
Yeah.
You know, and I hope we're not that stupid to let it go that far.
Right.
But I'm very concerned, because I'm not sure that we're ready to change, honestly.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's true, because if you walk around Paris in the first arrondissement, or, you know, in Washington, D.C. on K Street, you see a lot of arrogant people.
Of course, yeah.
Are they willing to accept their guilt?
Of course not.
Yeah.
And not only that, but are they willing to change even less? You know,
yeah.
Why would I not, you know, use my money and, you know, and, you know, of course not.
Now, do many people accuse you of being left wing? I mean,
of course.
Yeah. But you probably feel that's unfair, don't you?
Well, you know, I think what people don't understand is that it's not the issue of right or left. We're way beyond that.
Yeah.
You know? And it's why I try. You know, honestly, I even choose deliberately to not have the traditional Noam Chomsky or Waldron part of the film.
Yes, I noticed that. Yeah.
So, yeah, because I didn't want to have. Yeah. People focus on the fact it's a left-wing movie. That's not what it is.
Yeah.
I think the issue is way beyond right or left.
Yes.
The issue is, you know, today we are dying. We, you know, we are creating a major crisis on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And unless we do something, doesn't matter if it's right or left, whatever it is, we have to do something unless we all die, that's for sure.
Well, you know, Philippe, I'm thinking that, you know, Roman law, that's the law that we have today, you know, dating from Rome. I'm thinking we just have very, very flawed laws. You know, our laws are a joke, and we therefore must change our laws to make sure that the legal system supports justice.
Yeah.
You know, that's really what it boils down to.
Absolutely.
Don't you think? I mean, you know, because we're...
Not only on a national level, but on an international level as well.
Yes, of course.
You know, but that's funny, I don't know if you remember, but that was Henry Kissinger who was saying, international law only applies to poor countries.
Yeah.
You know, it tells you clearly, you know, he was absolutely honest, at least in his way of thinking.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it is. You know?
Yeah.
The world is skewed and the system is skewed in favor of the powerful.
Of course.
It's fine as long as, you know, we a lot of people will say, well, you know, we are, it's a jungle out there and we are wolf among wolves.
Yeah.
That is fine, again, as long as the resources of the planet are unlimited. You know, that's fine.
Well, even still, I mean, if I work in good faith with you and write up a reasonably good review of your film, you're going to want to work with me.
Right.
But if I just trash you at the first 2 minutes, you're going to likely want to hang up. And so I'm not sure that, you know, cooperation sometimes is much more preferable.
No, but I was using your morality set as
Yeah, true.
To go to the, you know, in the court of the people who are in this thing and use their own argument.
Yeah.
To say, well, doesn't matter, fine, you can think that way, but what you don't realize is that you are digging your grave.
Yeah, you're right. No, you're right.
And that's what I'm
I was correct about leaving morality aside. I was correct. So your vision of the future, I won't keep you longer. You stay on the line as long as you want. But Philippe, what do you see the world, you know, being like in, say, 30 years?
You know, honestly, I don't know, because I don't, honestly, I think that we'll go, if we don't change anything and just continue to put Ben Hayes, we are going toward a major crisis, that's for sure, within these 30 years. There's no other way.
Okay.
You know, so will we be intelligent enough to change our system radically, you know, and start to see where the faults are and change that? Honestly, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, every time that I hear one of our leaders, you know, making a big speech about this kind of issue, I just want to run away and go in the forest.
That's
the problem.
Tell me a bit about your own career. I didn't spend much time researching you. If you can just describe your own life and career, it would be interesting.
Well, I, you know, if I'm interested, first of all, by these issues, is because I studied philosophy. You know,
okay.
I was in France a student. I studied philosophy at Sorbonne for many, many years. And at the same time, I started, because it was my passion, of course, to make movies. You know, like when I did this first documentary called, in English, The Empire in Africa, which was about the civil war in Sierra Leone.
Okay.
You know, and it was the same story. You know, I was just showing that, in fact, the major crisis in Sierra Leone, the civil war, which lasted for 10 years, was totally manipulated by the northern countries because of the resources of Sierra Leone. You know, that was simple as that. And a journalist asked me, well, why are you putting yourself, because of course we shot during the civil war, and it was extremely violent and extremely difficult and this and that. And a journalist asked me, well, why do you put yourself in this kind of situation? Why do you take so much risk? It makes no sense. And I told him, honestly, the answer which came to me, I said, well, you know, I think I'm not courageous enough to take a weapon and fight. You know, so I take a camera and fight,
It's
a little bit more safe. You know? And it's true that I was always interested by these issues and at the same time making movies. So I, you know, my main career, I'm a video producer. I produce a lot of feature films, but which were, I produced probably, I don't know, 25 feature films, which were all like, you know, even if they were stories, they were always had, you know, a world issue in mind.
Okay.
There was always a background. I was always interested to use movies, you know, to make people understand what's going on in the world.
Instead of writing a book, you prefer to make a movie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I like. I like to see images and put sounds and images together, and, you know. And I produced a lot of films, and I started by directing, of course, when I was young, and I started to make my own movies when I was 13 years old.
Okay.
And I continued until I became a professional producer, which was very early on. I was 19 when I started to produce movies.
Mm.
And I didn't stop until I came back to directing with this movie on Sierra Leone. And you know, I created Cinema Libre Studio. I came in this country like 17 years ago.
Okay.
Even if you can tell that with my accent.
Yeah, okay.
And I created here a little group, which is Cinema Libre Studio, which is, you know, doing production, distribution, foreign sales, everything. We do everything under one roof. Like, you know, you can come and they will find, of course, the camera and the equipment to make their movies. We can put the financing together for them. And after, we distribute movie in theaters, we distribute movie on DVDs, we sell to television, we sell to foreign distributors. We have all the post-production equipment as well, from A to Z to do image and sound and everything. So, you know, so it's to have the freedom to do whatever we want.
Yeah.
Of course, as you may know, we are, I'm sure you know that well, a little bit specialized in social-political fields,
to
make a difference. So,
yeah, yeah.
So we do a lot.
You do what you're interested in doing.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. You do what you're interested in doing, of course,
You know, I believe that movie can make a difference, and, you know, that's what I'm doing again.
Yeah.
If I was more courageous, maybe I would take a weapon and go fight somewhere in the world.
Well, the battle is in the battle of ideas, of course.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's it. I'm in the same battle. I mean, I've got World Affairs Monthly for the same reason. Although I've interviewed him a couple of times. He's a cartoonist in London, political cartoons, a famous guy. And you know, I was thinking as I was talking to him one day, I said, well, Martin is using images in cartoons, but I prefer words. I don't know. I always preferred words, but I think the image is extremely powerful.
I believe more that, you know, I think that, as you were saying, the battle is in the northern country. The battle
yes.
is in the U.S.
Oh, no question.
The battle is in France or in the U.K. or whatever.
Yeah.
Because we have to make people understand what's going on. And
yeah.
the result of all this misery around the world is us.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where the battle is.
That's the battle, yeah.
And the weapon somewhere, you know.
Oh, no question. Well, it's great to talk to you, Philippe. You know, and good luck with the film.
Well,
and I'm a little worried about the volume of your voice, but you know, I'm sorry about that. You know, my voice will probably be loud, but your voice will be less loud. I hope the audience doesn't get angry. And
if you want to send it to us, we can probably rebalance it.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, that's a good idea. Okay. Okay. I'll do that. All right. Well, thanks so much, Philippe.
No problem. My pleasure.
I'll be in touch.
Thank you.
Bye bye.